We've been making our way through a series of sermons where we've been turning our attention to some parts of the ordinary Christian life. We've called this series the series about the ordinary Christian life. And so looking at, again, a number of these elements, and this morning we're looking at forgiveness. Now, you might remember that Jesus taught disciples to pray in a particular way, gave us a template for prayer that we call the Lord's Prayer. And so in this prayer, Jesus taught us to pray to God saying, "Forgive us our debts as we have forgiven our debtors." And beneath this prayer are at least four assumptions. One of these assumptions is that we need forgiveness from God. Also, that we need then to forgive others. And then thirdly, that the two are related, our forgiveness from God and our forgiving others. And then fourth, that forgiving involves a debt. What we need to forgive is a debt. Now, forgiveness is an ordinary part of the Christian life because in our day-to-day lives, we create debts. We create debts because there is this very deep and this complex transaction that happens between us. So when someone is, say for example, when someone is rude to you, the rudeness creates a debt. It's a debt of offense. Offense against your sense of worth and dignity. And that's because you are owed a measure of worth and dignity, at least as a fellow human being, you should be owed that. But in an act of rudeness, you're treated less than that, less than what should be owed to you. And so this debt is created. And the temptation after this is to try to recoup this debt. The temptation is to try to recoup this debt by perhaps being rude in response. So you go, you know, an eye for an eye, insult for insult, debt for debt. So this is, again, it's an attempt to even up the score. However, the problem with trying to even up the score is that your sense of balance and fairness is usually not the same as another person's sense of balance and fairness, and perhaps that other person might not even have a sense of a scale at all, and that can get you into some dangerous territory. We have this sense, of course, of this balance, and we have a tendency also to tip the scales always in our favor. And then so suddenly a debt is traded back and forth, and a debt is traded in a way that can grow, it can escalate, and it can become more costly. And so an eye for an eye turns into an eye for two eyes, and then that turns into an eye for a head, and so on and so forth. And so suddenly rude behavior can turn into a fist fight. Or it can go in a different direction, perhaps, and it can turn into ice cold, silent bitterness that lasts for days and weeks, and maybe even longer than that. Well, the other option in dealing with debt is to forgive, and so to forgive is not to collect on the debt. This, of course, is not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to stop collecting on the debt. In fact, that can even feel a bit unfair. It can feel unjust not to collect on the debt. It can feel painful. And what this involves, this refraining, this refusal to collect on the debt, it involves a measure of suffering. Forgiveness is hard, and this is why Peter asks Jesus about how to go about doing it. And so we notice here, we should also take note of the fact that Peter's question about forgiveness and how much, it comes in the context. It comes into a context of what to do when another member of the family of disciples sins against you. And so the verses before this, they spell out this time-tested process for how to confront someone who sinned against you, how to take steps in order to deal with that. This is the follow-up, forgiveness. How many times should you forgive a brother who sins against you? Should you do it seven times? Now, scholars tell us that Peter is actually being pretty generous here by offering seven as a figure. Scholars suggest that there was actually a kind of a rule of thumb in that day that you got three chances at forgiveness. So three strikes and you're out. Three chances, three times you'd be required to offer forgiveness to your brother who sinned against you. But that fourth time, well then, at that time, the credit line of forgiveness is cut off, you know. Then the tap is shut. Peter is suggesting you double it plus one. And Peter's offering, of course, a good biblical number, a number of completion. It's good biblical mathematics. But Jesus, however, he takes that figure and he multiplies it, not seven, but 77. 77, of course, is like even a bigger multiple of completeness. And what's behind what Jesus is saying is you have to keep on going. Keep on going with forgiveness. And then as Jesus does so well, Jesus tells a story to help to show us what this transaction in the economy of God's kingdom, what it looks like, what it means to forgive. Now, this is an accountant's parable. It's an accountant's parable because it's all about value. It's all about relationships between these values. It's all about this transaction. And these values and interactions, they are very full of surprise. The first surprise is the amount that the servant owes the king. The word that is used there, this word in the Greek language, this is the biggest number that was available at that time in the language. This number 10,000, that's what our English translation gives. And also you might have seen the little footnote attached to the word in the Bible here in the ESV translation. There's this lovely little footnote there. If you go to the bottom, you find that that a talent was the equivalent to 20 years of laborer's wages. And so 10,000, if my math is correct, and math was never my strong suit, but 10,000 talents would then equal 200,000 years of laborer wages, okay? And so this figure is not a household figure, shall we say. You know, this is not just a common kind of measurement figure. This is more in the lines of like amounts to build pyramids or to build up cities, that kind of figure. This is a huge number. Obviously, this level of debt is utterly unpayable by any ordinary servant. However, the second surprise is that the king forgives this utterly unpayable debt. Forgives him clear. And then, the next surprise is that rather than being overcome by gratitude, rather than just being utterly amazed by this level of forgiveness, this tremendous act of mercy, the servant uses his freedom to go out to go and collect a debt that is owed to him. He goes and he sees his fellow servant, and like a mob thug, he goes and he jumps him, he puts a chokehold on him, and demands that he pays back the amount owed to him. This amount, this is actually more of a household figure, if you will, a more common, down-to-earth figure. It's not a small figure, 100 denarii, it's about 100 days of laborer wages. And yet compared to 200,000 years of wages, this is just a little drop in the ocean. You know, it's just not in comparison. The other servant pleads that this servant, that he have patience and, you know, that he have mercy, but the servant refuses to forgive this debt. He refuses to offer mercy. And the final shock of the parable happens when the king, the master, upon hearing this, hearing what has happened, and hearing from the other servants who are grieved that this happened, that he chastises the wicked servant for his lack of mercy in response to the mercy that was shown to him, and he hands the man over to torturers, literally the word is torturers, until he can pay back all of his debt. And Jesus then says that His heavenly Father will do the same to us if we refuse to forgive our brother from the heart. A very serious thing to say. Now, in order for us to understand and offer forgiveness, Jesus wants us to see three things that are being joined together here. He wants us to see the size of the debt, he wants us to see the cost of forgiveness, and he wants us then to respond and offer forgiveness, understanding these things, these values and their relationship. Now, I found, maybe you found this too, that it's common for people to think of their lives as being on a scale. There's this sort of this internal scale that a lot of people have. And it's a scale that kind of works like this. If, I do some bad things, I've messed up, I've made some big mistakes in my life, but, I've done some good things too, and I'm not that bad of a person. And, especially in comparison to perhaps some of the other guys and the things that they do, well, my scale's basically pretty level. In the parable, Jesus brings us perhaps even uncomfortably close to that wicked servant. And Jesus implies that before God, when it comes to measurement, when it comes to the scale, we are in a state of debt that actually we cannot repay. That the scales are tipped so heavily against us, we cannot, it isn't possible for us to pay back the debt. The debt can only be forgiven. We are, that far in a state of misery, of debt. And one of the key instructive surprises of the parable is that the servant who is faced with this debt, he doesn't actually truly grasp the scale of it. And in some ways, he seems to be blind to it. His heart seems to be so hardened to the true size of the debt that he somehow thinks that he can pay back everything. I mean, did you hear that in Jesus' parable there? Just give me mercy. I will pay back everything. How is he going to pay back everything? Does he think he's going to live forever? Does he think he's going to somehow become a king or something like that and leverage the wealth of a kingdom in order to pay back the debt? It's just not possible. And what we see in the servant is an inflated sense of himself that puts him out of touch with reality. He cannot see the proper relationship between things. To see our own debt before God and to see our inability to pay it back, that is to see reality. And it's to be humbled, actually. It's to be humbled by our sin. It's to be humbled by the desperate state that we are in before God. It is to see how far we've fallen short of God's glory. The theologian Miroslav Volf, he's done a lot of work on forgiveness. He wrote a book on it, and he makes this observation in one of his books. He writes, "Forgiveness flounders when I exclude the enemy from the community of humans, but also when I exclude myself from the community of sinners." We have to see who we are in order to really properly forgive. Now, the servant doesn't fully grasp the size of his debt, and we come to see in turn that he actually doesn't fully grasp the size and the cost of the forgiveness. His freedom from the greatest bondage and the deepest debt, it doesn't move his heart and lead him into mercy. And it's easy to miss this part of forgiveness. It's easy to miss the fact that forgiveness costs. Forgiveness is costly. The 10,000 talent debt that the servant owes the king, it doesn't just go away. It doesn't just disappear when the king forgives the debt. No, it's borne by the king. He takes the debt himself. He covers it. And with this little parable, Jesus is subtly directing us to the bigger story of God's kingdom, the bigger transaction of God's kingdom. God is the great king, and we are servants. We are servants who owe him a debt that we cannot pay back. And yet in his mercy, he has forgiven us our debts. But his forgiveness has been unfathomably costly. He came to us, and he came to us as a servant, actually as the true servant. And in coming to us as the true servant, he came and he bore the cost himself, and he suffered as he bore that cost. And he bore that cost through his death on the cross. And this is what we remember as we celebrate the supper. We remember Jesus' own words to us, who said, he said, "This cup is the new covenant sealed in my blood, shed for you, my blood shed for you for the forgiveness of sins." Jesus bore the cost for us, for our sake. This is at the heart of the gospel. Now, Jesus gives a very stern warning also at the close of the parable. If we who are forgiven an unpayable debt refuse to forgive our brother or sister from our heart, well, then we undermine the mercy of God and we put ourselves under his judgment. The parable, he has the parable has the king delivering the wicked servant literally again to the torturers. It's in our English translation, it says jailers, but you could also translate that word to torturers, until he can pay back the debt. And this is a very serious thing to say. This is serious business. Jesus' mention of torturers here is intriguing. To refuse to respond to the grace of God that is offered us, is offered to us in Christ, that's to refuse Jesus himself. To refuse God's personal mercy in Jesus. And this has eternal ramifications. And yet to hold back forgiveness also becomes its own kind of torture. To live with the bitterness, to metaphorically speaking, to always keep your hands clenched around the neck of the person that's hurt you and just to hold them there and to try to keep them there, this takes on its own life and it can be torturous to us. It can ruin us. It can do so many things to us. But one of the sad things about unforgiveness and holding on to this debt and trying to keep on collecting it is that our lives can orbit around this pain and bitterness in a way that actually takes us away from the life that we're meant to have, a life that is filled up and is lived into the glory and the life of God in Christ. A fellow pastor who's done a lot of work on the topic of forgiveness does some speaking on it. He speaks of forgiveness like having a bucket. Like, think about one of those big 5-gallon pails. And what you can do is you can put all the hurt that you've experienced like rocks in a bucket like that. And to refuse to forgive is to drag that bucket around with you all the time. All the time it's there. And it's tiring to do that. Even as sometimes our life can even, you know, be centered around it. Sometimes it's really difficult to give that stuff up because it's become so much a part of us. Forgiving those who hurt us is, again, it's to stop constantly collecting, trying to collect on the debt that we think is owing us, is owed to us. In a question and answer session that he led on the topic of forgiveness, Tim Keller, he talked about the process of forgiveness, you know, how to go about this and what is involved in this. And he talked about it in three parts. He gained these three parts from another theologian. And he said that to forgive means, first of all, it means to name, it means to acknowledge the wrongdoing, it means to condemn it. And then second, forgiveness means not to count that wrongdoing against the person. Again, that's not to try to collect on that debt. And then third, forgiveness is a form of love. Forgiveness connects with love. It's important to understand this and how forgiveness means wanting what is good for the person, even for the person that's hurt you. And that doesn't mean that then you just continue to enable the person to go on and hurt you or enable them to hurt other people. Forgiveness might mean that you need to, or that you already have called the cops, you've called the police, you've called the person to accountability, Forgiveness does not remove justice. It does not remove accountability. Again, Jesus' teaching in this passage, it comes, we should remember, it comes right after an important section on how to confront someone who has sinned against you. So there's accountability all underneath all of this as well. This again, this is not easy, forgiveness. We know this. For some of us who have been hurt deeply, the first step in forgiving is simply to want to forgive, you know, to want to go down that route of forgiveness, to want to try to stop collecting on the debt. And if we're struggling to forgive, it seems to me from what we see here, what Jesus teaches us here in the passage, that one way to move ahead in forgiveness is simply just to acknowledge how hard it is, how hard, how painful this is, and then to consider how painful it was for God to forgive us. And then let that reality move us ahead into forgiveness. To think about the cross, to let the grace of Christ push us along, carry us along, so that we can give up our need to stop collecting on the debt. This past fall, the grace of Christ was quite profoundly displayed in a Texas courtroom. You might remember how a police officer, Amber Geiger, she was sentenced for the murder of Botham Jean. Geiger had come off a shift and had mistakenly entered into the apartment of her downstairs neighbor, Botham. And he was sitting on his couch when she burst in. She thought he was an intruder, and she ended up shooting him to death in his own home. After her sentencing, there was a time for victim statements, and Botham's brother, Brant, he took the stand, and he surprisingly said that he forgave his brother's murderer. He said this, he said, "I forgive, and I know that if you go to God and ask him, he will forgive you. I want the best for you, because I know that's exactly what Botham would want you to do. And the best would be to give your life to Christ. I'm not going to say anything else. I think giving your life to Christ would be the best thing that Botham would want you to do." And then, and this was caught at televised, just because it was so stunning, Brant went and asked if he could embrace Amber Geiger, and did it right there in the courtroom, hugged her. And that wasn't it. Later, Judge Tammy Kemp also gave Amber a hug and handed her a Bible after the sentencing and told her to read John 3:16 to start there. And she told her also this, "You haven't done so much that you cannot be forgiven." Is there someone you need to forgive? Is there someone you need to ask for forgiveness? Let's let the words of Jesus move us toward those people in forgiveness, that we would forgive our brothers and sisters from the heart.